This is 1330 WRCA Watertown, Boston, a Beasley Broadcast Group station.
Greetings, guys and gals, and welcome to Tube Talk on WRCA 1330 AM.
I'll get by as long as I have you. Though there be rain and darkness too, I'll not complain. I'll see it through. Poverty may come to me, it's true, but what care I? Get by as long as I have you.
I'll get by. Oh yes, honey child, I'll get by. Just as long as I have you. And remember, though there be rain, and of course, a little darkness too, I ain't never gonna complain. Mm-mm, not me. I'll see it through.
Cat's gonna beat out the smell of jive. Beat it out on the male side. Boy,
what you gonna say that game?
Oh boy,
what you gonna say that game?
Palomar, Shalimar, Swanee Shore. Let me dig that jive once more. Give those hep cats call.
Yeah.
Come on, boys, let's have a ball.
The jim, jim, jump is the jumping jive.
Makes you dig your jive on the Miller side. Hep, hep. Hep, hep.
The jim, jim, jump is the solid jive.
Makes you 9 foot tall when you're 4 foot five. Hep, hep.
Hep, hep.
Then you get your steady food. You make the joint jump like the gators do.
The jim jam jump is the jumping jive.
Makes you like your eggs on the Jersey side. Hep, hep.
Hep, hep.
The jim jam jumping jive makes you hep, hep on the Miller side. Hep, hep.
I'm on the middle of the night. Hep, hep.
Jimmy Jammer, jump in jive, for makes you hep hep on the belly side. Tibbity boodily 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 diddly doodly diddly, going 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 di da da. Now told you about the jumping jive. Jim Jam jump the jumping jive. I know you dug this mellow jive. Boom, you dig it on the mellow side.
Thanks for tuning in to Tube Talk. We opened up with the Ink Spots, then right into some Cab Calloway, and I could listen to that all night long. Just the incomparable improvisation. Wonderful sound. Really typifies that whole era. Every Friday night, folks, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, we celebrate our musical, entertainment, and electronic history. We do it at WRCA 1330 AM, over the air from the greater Boston area, and streaming on the World Wide Web on the WRCA website. We hope you enjoy our humble program. If you have comments, questions, any suggestions, please drop us an email. TubeTalk1@gmail.com. Visit TubeTalkClassicRadioShow.org. And as I was getting ready for the show here, we stumbled across some great quotes from radio. Some things here we share with you before we get on to our very nifty guest this evening. So let's see what we have here in the old joke bag. This is a Rodney Dangerfield radio joke. I could tell my parents hated me. My bath toys were a toaster and a radio. Well, you know, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, said Orson Welles. I'm an actor. I'm a writer. I'm a producer. I'm a director. I am a magician. I appear on stage and on the radio. Why are there so many of me and so few of you? And on that note, let's go on to some more music. This is Fats Waller.
Big girl who doesn't anything more. Old man trouble, you'll never find him hanging around my front door. Cause I got rhythm music that goes with it. I got my gal who doesn't anything more. Who doesn't anything more? Swinging on out the jam. Yes, yes. My, my. Well, all right. Thank you.
us, Fats. That was just a beautiful piece of work. You just feel the enthusiasm and the energy, and that was early Fats Waller. Tube Talk is pleased tonight to welcome Ron Ramirez to our radio parlor. Ron is the proprietor of PhilcoRadio.com and the author of Philco Radio 1928 to 1942. Thank you so much for stopping by tonight, Ron.
Finally, the Ron has come back to Tube Talk.
That's right. It's a big night. It's a big night all around. Another rainy, miserable, crummy night with an uncooperative subway. But the best thing that's happened is Ron is sitting in the big rocker here in the parlor, and we're going to talk a little bit about Philco tonight. So our goal this evening is to bring you a little insight on the people behind Philco's success, the personalities behind the radios, so to speak here. And as Ron and I were trying to put a few things together here for the show, Ron made a very interesting point in that out of all the big radio manufacturing companies and personalities associated with them, you know, you hear of Sarnoff and RCA, McDonald and Zenith, and Crossley with Crossley, of course. But you very rarely hear about the management or the personalities, the people behind the Philco brand, even though Philco is immensely popular and is this huge, iconic brand, number one leader in radio in the country for so many years. We very seldom hear about the people involved. So hopefully tonight we'll remedy that a little bit. And before we even get started with the beginning of our chat tonight, you know, as I have to steal a Cheap Red Buttons line, you know, James Skinner put radios in all those homes and he never got a dinner. So why do you think he just didn't get the spotlight? I mean, he's one of the biggest movers and shakers, and we're certainly going to go back and start with the beginning of Philco. But out of all those other guys, Ron, who got so much attention, why do you think James Skinner, who was such a dynamo behind Philco, did he not seek the spotlight? Was that part of his personality?
Well, from what little I've been able to learn about Jim Skinner, it appears that he was not a publicity seeker. He did his job. He made Philco number one in radio. He did his job very well. When he stepped away from Philco, he devoted the rest of his life to charity, to raising money for various charities, and he was honored by the city of Philadelphia for that with the Philadelphia Award in 1943. But he was never a real publicity hound, it appears. You know, David Sarnoff was a bit of a narcissist, and it seems like Commander McDonald was too, to some extent, as well as Powell Crossley and perhaps Arthur Atwater Kent, but not James Skinner.
And he was the strong, silent type, it seems. And it's funny because, you know, I see all these, you know, see some of these publicity photographs with Commander McDonald and flying in small planes and driving cars, demonstrating car radio. I mean, they're just literally all over the place. And you very seldom hear about the folks behind Philco. So we're going to fix that tonight so we can get going here. The Spencers, Thomas and Frank Marr, started out, I guess, what would become, you know, the Philco powerhouse, but they started out in the carbon arc lamp business as Helios Electric, and those were some of the early leaders of Philco, right?
Yes, that was around April of 1892 when the Spencer brothers, Frank Marr, and two business associates started that very small, modest company that they named Helios Electric Company. And their main business was producing carbon arc lamps. A little later on, Frank Marr became the head of the firm, and Thomas Spencer stepped back to become the superintendent of the plant. As years went on, the carbon arc lamp business was not doing very well, and they ended up selling electrical parts and supplies after they lost the rights to use the name Helios.
Yep, that was taken over by another company, and then they're forced to kind of scrounge around a little bit for a new line of business, it sounds like.
Yeah, and in 1904, things were so bad, the company was forced to appoint a receiver.
Uh-oh.
And the company's directors were told their remaining assets would only bring 20 cents on the dollar.
Yikes.
And they decided rather than selling out at that price, they liquidated some receivables and they managed to stay in business.
And essentially, they sort of morph into this storage battery company. When does the name go from Helios to Philadelphia Storage and Battery Company?
That occurred on July 25th, 1906.
I see.
When they changed their name from Helios Manufacturing Company to Philadelphia Storage Battery Company. They completely reorganized and changed their focus from electrical supplies to storage batteries for automobiles, trucks, mine locomotives. They started out with 5 stockholders and $10,000 in capital.
And, you know, I guess so business improves, and in 1911, the company hires a soon-to-be graduating chemist named James Skinner, who would soon really be playing the lead role in the Philco story. So he comes on board, and the company's still heavily in the battery business. And as Philco starts to look at the changes going on in the electronics world around it, as we've talked before when we had you on a little bit, you know, sort of the late 20s is when the focus at Philco starts to shift, and they start to look at working into, the radio business. And that's really a result of some changes in the business with tubes and some of the developments in producing radios themselves. I guess Philco was looking around, or the storage business is starting to look around and say, hey, this might not be going on forever, and maybe we need to switch gears.
Well, if I can back up
on your
timeline for just a moment.
Sure, you go right ahead.
Jim Skinner joined Philco, or it wasn't known as Philco then, it was strictly Philadelphia Storage Battery. As their chemist. But he soon proved his ability in business and pushed the company in new directions. He managed to get the Philadelphia Storage Battery Company involved in starting batteries. He was responsible for the Philco trademark, which came about in 1919. Skinner made the company involved in radio batteries in 1923. Of course, as you just mentioned, radio was the big thing in the 20s. And they followed radio batteries up with the battery eliminators that they called socket power units. This occurred in 1925. Now, in 1928... RCA came out with a vacuum tube that could be operated on AC, and that made Philco socket power units obsolete. By this time, socket powers had become a large part of their business, so they scratched their heads wondering what to do, and they decided to manufacture radios. And in 1928, Philco came out with their very first line of radios.
Well, you know, it's interesting the way Skinner seemed to, I was reading some of the notes on the Philco.com, Philcoradio.com site, and Skinner seemed to have a good instinct as far as where to go. And, you know, he sets the tone over there, and they go into to the radio business in the 20s, and, you know, the rest is just a boomtown story from there on, it sounds like, and Skinner is leading the juggernaut from the late 20s when Philco first comes out with some sets, and eventually into that leads them into this dominating position. And, you know, what was his, you know, he seems to go seamlessly from sort of a chemistry background into electronics background. Did he ever do any other electronics work, or did he really just pick that all up when he was at Philco?
He must have picked that up while he was at Philco.
Sure.
Demonstrated his business ability while he was at the University of Pennsylvania when the school's Priestley Club, which was the chemistry club, needed funds. Skinner served ice cream and cake at their club meetings to raise funds for the club. And, of course, having a head for business, business acumen, if you will, Skinner was able to rise rapidly within the ranks of the Philadelphia Storage Battery Company. They soon found that he was better at business, perhaps, than at chemistry, even though he held a Bachelor of Science in Chemical Engineering.
Interesting.
But it seemed that his strong point was business, and it seemed he had a knack for making the right decisions for Philco at the right time, and positioned Philco at the top of the heap eventually in 1930 when the company became the dominant force in radio, the number one radio manufacturer in the country, a spot which they held until well after World War II, as a matter of fact.
Well, you know, we're just going to hit the pause button here very briefly and remind our listeners that this is Tube Talk. Our guest this evening is Ron Ramirez. I am Paul Burish, and you've tuned in to the finest radio experience on the planet. This is the show for the vintage radio enthusiast, the music lover, and the listener of fine programs that still exist on the radio. You just got to track them down. And we're discussing Philco, and we're discussing James Skinner. And, you know, the thing that makes this evolution from lamps to batteries to radio leaders even more remarkable is all of this happens against the background of, you know, the Great Depression. And, again, Skinner seems to be the right guy at the time. Just, you can kind of get a read. You know, I'm looking at some of the vignettes about him. They had an acquisition of another company, apparently, and some very fancy furniture came with that. So they're going to move that into the offices, the executive offices at Philco. And he says something to the effect that, well, we won't need that fancy furniture here. We have no need for that. That I believe there was another story about what he would take in the cafeteria. You know, he'd take the extra slice of ice cream because he thought it was a value. So he seems to have, in addition to this, you know, very robust business skill, he's also watching pennies. He's not flashy. And again, maybe this all leads to the fact that he never seemed to grab the headlines that some of his contemporaries did at the time. Any other stories about Skinner and his behavior at Philco? How was he received by the employees? Did they was he somebody that was easy to relate to? Did he mix amongst them at all?
You know, that is something I've never been able to find out. The only factoid I've been able to discover on those lines was the fact that Skinner would eat his lunches in the company cafeteria along with the other employees. As far as how he related to his employees or what have you, I honestly don't know.
Yeah, again, it's one of those things, you know, is it would be a marvelous find if somebody, you know, came upon a cache of personal documents or papers or things that would kind of give you a little bit of an idea into him. But again, even eating in the employee lunchroom, you probably pick up on a lot of the feelings, the sentiments, what's on people's mind, you know, how things are going on the factory floor. And, you know, Skinner is running with the ball here. The early 30s, Philco is dominating. And, you know, not to get off the topic from Skinner here, but there were a couple of designers involved with some of the success at Philco, some of the, you know, very attractive cabinet designs that people still to this day find, you know, beautiful to look at. And they house these, you know, powerhouse chassis in many cases. So who were the folks behind some of the famous cathedral-style cabinets? Edward Combs and was it Norman Bel Geddes were some of their key designers as well?
Well, they hired Edward L. Combs early on to design a number of cabinets for the company. Of course, he is best known for designing the Model 20, the Model 21, which morphed into the 70 and 90. He also designed a number of their console cabinets. Now, in 1931, the company hired Norman Bel Geddes, who was a very famous industrial designer, to design a number of their cabinets for them. And later on, they would use the services of Clyde Schuler, Benjamin Nash, and there were others that I can't think of right now that were used later on. But Combs, Bel Geddes, Schuler, and Nash are probably the most famous of the designers Philco utilized.
You know, they just seem to have the knack to have the right design, the right people in place to execute it. And then they had an excellent engineering department because, you know, as you talk, go out to the radio community, you go to swap meets or you go to events or you go to places where antique radio collectors gather, not only do people say, gee, that's a beautiful looking set, you hear that, you know, how well early Philco was built and how well early Philco was engineered. So it's the complete package, and I guess that really, you know, in addition to their vision with marketing and spending marketing money and their distribution system, was just a successful combination, even in the Depression.
Absolutely. And going back to Jim Skinner for a moment.
Sure.
He was described by Fortune magazine as being thrifty and Scotch, and they also called Philco Scotch and thrifty. You know, Philco really, during the time Skinner was at the helm, reflected Skinner's personality. We talked about the fact that when he was presented the choice of buying two slices of cake or three slices of ice cream, he buy the three slices of ice cream because he saved money by doing so. And a lot of times today we'll find a Philco radio that seems like it has some parts from an older model used on a newer set for some strange reason or another, and that was simply the fact that this depression was going on.
Sure.
And Skinner was trying to save every dime he could and use every part that he could instead of letting anything go to waste. And again, this is all a reflection of Skinner's personality.
Yeah, and you know, and it's also necessity at the time as well. I mean, you couldn't have cast a better leader for those years. And you know, you're certainly right. You know, waste not, want not. I mean, if you had something, you try to make a modification to accommodate using it. Especially if you look at what your supplies of parts are and try to work it in as best as you possibly can. By the way, I would have taken the three slices of ice cream, but I just think that's because I really like the ice cream. I would have paid extra. I would have paid extra. But so you know, it does. From what you're speaking of, it does result in some of these combinations that are found sometimes by collectors, where you find perhaps a chassis and a cabinet that you wouldn't think, you know, should be together, or vice versa. And why were they successful? Well, that was one of the key reasons. And another character, and I didn't really mention that I'd like to chat with him, but you might have some interesting information on him. You know, James Carmine, who's this fellow who I've seen him in a couple of photographs, and he always seems like a very classy dresser, very nattily attired, which, you know, most people had, a better sense of style probably in the 30s as far as their appearance than we do today. But some of the quotes from this fellow as far as, the leader of their marketing department at time, you know, get it in the newspapers, get the information in the newspapers, drag the customers into the stores, figuring that if they could get somebody into a dealer's showroom, if the fellow was interested in a small, more inexpensive set, maybe we could upsell them, you know, into something else. And certainly the same type of attitude that happens now when you go to a car dealer or appliance store. Well, we get you in with what we put in the paper, and you know, hopefully we have another chance. And he was also charged with, I guess, later on during the war years, trying to find products to sell when Philco wasn't in a position to provide radios to the general public during World War II. So again, sort of the right guy in a little flashier position, and maybe somebody who's not necessarily a clone of Skinner, but somebody who he felt good with having. And certainly he got some results for Philco as well. They're one of the better distribution networks, from what I understand, in the radio business.
Philco had an outstanding distribution network, which was brought about during the time that they were selling storage batteries. And so when they went into radios, they already had a distribution network, which was a big plus for them. And it was nationwide, and that was really a strong point.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting what Skinner's career, how it sort of pans out here at the end. He leads them in perhaps their greatest decade, the 30s, and it brings them to this meteoric rise, number one. And almost like a Winston Churchill type of situation here, later in the 30s, he becomes chairman of the board and seems to have less of a role in some of the day-to-day operations. And, you know, the war comes on, and he starts to take less of a role in the company. Maybe you can give us a little sense for, you know, how does he, you know, wind up in the back seat, so to speak, as we roll through the 30s?
Well, in 1939... James Skinner became Philco's chairman of the board, but by the end of that year, he left the company. There are two different stories floating around through the annals of history. One story says he left because of ill health. Another story says he left because of a policy tiff.
Yes, yes.
Now, It was no secret that Larry Gubb, John Ballantyne, and James Buckley wanted to take Philco's stock public. And it was also no secret that James Skinner was opposed to doing this. Up until 1940, Philco was a privately held corporation. Now, Larry Gubb was the head of a Philco subsidiary that was created in 1932 called Philco Radio and Television Corporation. Mm-hmm. And John Ballantyne had and James Buckley were other Philco executives, more junior executives at the time, if you will. And it seems like they joined together, and I won't say they pushed Skinner out, but chances are the direction they wanted to go and the direction Skinner wanted to go were two different directions and were certainly a contributing factor to Skinner's leaving the company.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just, it's interesting how, you know, some people say thank you to you, you know. So, you know, they couldn't, you know, you would like to think even, well, maybe they could make him comfortable in a in an office somewhere and, you know, still somewhat involve him. But, again, you know, in business, just as it is today, as it probably was then, and that conflicting points of view and different strategies occasionally result in the people who are responsible for the great success, you know, moving on from what they gave birth to. So certainly Philco goes public, and, you know, right after this, we're into the war years, and Philco does a fantastic job with their government contracts and their war work, but it's not going to be the same company as it was in the 30s when the war is over. And then we have some new leadership that comes in as well after Mr. Skinner.
Yeah, after Skinner left, Larry Gubb became president, and then later on you had James Buckley, then John Ballantyne, and after a while you had James Carmine.
Yep, he actually made it to the top, yep.
Yep, he made it to the top. He was president of Philco from 1954 until 1956, and he resigned in April of that year, and that's when James Skinner's son, James M. Skinner Jr., became president of the company.
Now, how does Skinner Jr. stack up against his dad as far as his skills with the business and skills, you know, as far as moving them forward? It doesn't sound like he was cut out of the same piece of cloth.
Well, that could be, but Jim Skinner Jr. inherited a very different company.
Difficult situation.
His
yes.
father had left in 1939. By 1956, Philco was really a company in trouble. They had grown uncontrollably. They had branched out in many different directions that they really shouldn't have branched out into. They were trying to become another RCA when they should have stuck to what they did best, which was electronics. You see, Philco became involved with refrigerators, freezers, washers, dryers, all the white goods, in addition to television and radio, and military electronics, research and development, and it was just too much for them. And Jim Skinner Jr. had an advantage over his father in that he had also gone to the University of Pennsylvania, but his major was business instead of chemical engineering. He went to Penn's Wharton School.
I'm very, very prestigious, yes.
Mm-hmm. He graduated in 1936 and soon after joined Philco. And when Skinner Sr. left, Skinner Jr. stayed on and slowly rose within the ranks. And by 1956, executives felt that they needed another Skinner to turn the company around. And as I said, so much was going on, and the company had so many problems, it was just too much for him to handle.
Yeah, and I think that's an excellent point you make, in that he does inherit a significantly different company. And, you know, the theory, you hear this slogan that Philco had. They had this theory that they should have something for every season, that they'd have a product that would sell even when it was slow season for radios, thus the air conditioning and the refrigerators. And you can see they start to lose focus. And the next thing you know, even the radio, you know, the radio's become a little unremarkable, even though they're still part of the Philco product line, and it goes into, as often happens with a company, they lose focus, and then the performance of the products doesn't seem what it should be. So it seems certainly as if the meteoric rise started with a Skinner, and it's starting to close with a Skinner.
Yeah. You could see when you look at Philco's radio products how they began to cheapen after Skinner became chairman of the board, and after Skinner resigned from Philco in 1939, it seems from then on Philco's radios became slowly lower quality, and by the 1950s, I hate to say this, but quite frankly, a lot of the radios became just more or less very low end.
Yeah, run of the mill. They were no better or no worse probably than what you'd find in a lot of stores at the time. And sort of the quality and the prestige of having a Philco was, you know, the shine was diminishing on that.
Absolutely.
On that Philco label. Well, Ron, you know, we've chatted here for a bit, and I think we might have succeeded in getting Skinner some of the credit that he so rightly deserves. And it's interesting, you know, if you were to show some radio collectors pictures of Sarnoff or McDonald or Powell Crossley, they'd probably recognize them. You could show them pictures of Philco radios, and they could probably tell you the model number and maybe even the year it came out and the tube count and whether they like it or they don't. But if you showed them a picture of James Skinner, they might not quite know who it was, whether it was somebody who was a dealer selling them or if it was the president of the company. So I'd like to think that tonight we did manage to enlighten the audience as to the man behind the dial, really the chief motivator, I guess you would say, or what's the term I'm looking for. He really took them from a smaller company that was on the fringes of the electronics business and created this huge powerhouse. And you know, it's just a shame sometimes how things happen. But I think we should appreciate Philco for what it was, and the radios that we still collect today, the great ones especially, are a great testament to James Skinner, don't you think?
I do, and you know, there is such a thing as the Consumer Electronics Hall of Fame.
Oh, yes, you mentioned that.
Al Crossley's in it. Eugene McDonald's in it. David Sarnoff's in it. James Skinner, nope. It's James Skinner who? He's not in it, and he deserves to be in it, because without Jim Skinner, Philco never would have been number one in radio. I am firmly convinced of that fact. Without Jim Skinner, Philco may not have survived the Depression. It was because of him and his leadership and his business qualities that made Philco number one in radio and made Philco remarkable name in consumer electronics and a memorable name that people still think of today, long after the company has more or less met its demise.
Well, he'd probably be pleased that we're still so intrigued and interested, and that so many people still preserve some of those great sets from the heyday of Philco. And after your endorsement there, Ron, I'm ready to vote. Get me down to the polls, and if I could have a vote, I'd put it in for James Skinner. So at least in the Tube Talk Hall of Fame, I'll motion that we elect him. Ron, do you second?
Absolutely second, yes.
So he will firmly reside in the Tube Talk Radio Hall of Fame, though he may not have made the political Hall of Fame, we'll call it. So anyway, Ron, thanks so much for sharing your knowledge on Jim Skinner with us tonight and Philco. It's always fun and always very enlightening. Thanks again for being on. Have a great night.
Thank you, Paul. It's always an honor and a privilege to be with you, and I appreciate you asking me every time. Thank you so much.
No problem. You have a good one now. Bye-bye.
You must remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers woo, they still say I love you. All that you can rely. No matter what the future brings, as time goes by. Moonlight and love songs are never out of date. Hearts full of passion, jealousy, and hate. Woman needs man, and man must have his mate that no one can deny. It's still the same old story, a fight for love and glory, a case of do or die. The world will always welcome lovers as time goes by. Moonlight and love songs are never out of date. Hearts full of passion, jealousy, and hate. Woman needs man, and man must have its mate that no one can deny. It's still the same old story, a fight for love and glory, a case of do or die. The world will always welcome lovers as time goes by.
Thanks, Ron Ramirez, for being our guest this evening and sharing some of your exceptional knowledge on the subject of Philco and information concerning the personalities, the people behind the dial. So maybe when someone looks over and sees that Philco, nifty Philco radio sitting on their bench there, they should look at that dial and perhaps they should see the face of James Skinner. So hop on over to philcoradio.com. You can get some more interesting information about Philco Company, Philco Radios. It's linked to the Philco Forum, should you need assistance in repairing, restoring, general questions on your Philco collection. That's the place to do it. Ron Ramirez, very dedicated to the Philco site, a true labor of love. We're fortunate to have him as a guest and fortunate to have him in the hobby.
Must you dance every dance with the same fortunate man? You have danced with him since the music began. Won't you change partners and dance with me? Must you dance quite so close, with your lips touching his face? Can't you see I'm longing to be in his place? Won't you change partners and dance with me? Ask him to sit this one out, and while you're alone, I'll tell the waiter to tell him he's wanted on the telephone. You've been locked in his arms ever since heaven knows when. Won't you change partners and then you may never have to change partners again. Thank you. change partners and dance with me. In his arms, ever since, heaven knows when, won't you change partners and then? You may never have to change partners again.
For you, Change Partners with Bob Eberle on the vocal, with Jimmy Dorsey leading the band, and that Old Black Magic, Glenn Miller, wonderful orchestra, Ray Eberle and the Modern Airs. Well, gang, it's almost time for us to get on the bus and get out of here for Friday. Thanks for joining us. Tell your friends about the Tube Talk experience. Ask them to join us each Friday night, 10 p.m. WRCA 1330 a.m. And you know, people tell me I don't mention this enough. If you would like to learn more about antique radio, I would humbly suggest that you Google up your local antique radio club, attend a swap meet, go to a presentation, meet people who are well-versed in so many aspects of the hobby, repair and restore perhaps, or maybe someone who's a radio history buff. You can learn a lot. Radio clubs exist all over the country and all over the world. So please, we here at Tube Talk ask you to support your local antique radio club. And to that end, we have some events we'd like to mention upcoming. The New England Antique Radio Club is going to be hosting Saturday, April 26th. It's spring flea market and guest speaker. Doors will open 7:30 a.m. Whew, early in the morning. Good for you early birds. Program is over at noon in the flea market, but the program, it just begins with our guest speaker, Dr. Baer, Ralph H. Baer. Video game pioneer, inventor, and engineer will speak in the hall. Dr. Baer, recipient of many awards, will describe some of his many contributions to the video game industry, including TV Tennis, Odyssey, and Simon. So there you go. So check that out. You can get more information at nearc.net. The New England Amateur Radio Festival is coming up May 2nd and 3rd at the Deerfield, New Hampshire Fairgrounds. You can find more information at nearfest.com. That's near-fest.com. Meet some hams, find a lot of interesting equipment. It's great to take a ride up to New Hampshire in the spring. More radio fun awaits. The Delaware Valley Historic Radio Club brings you the Kutztown Meet May 9th and 10th. Google them up. Drop by and see our pal Mike Costa at Gobs of Knobs. If you need knobs for a set, he's your man. If you'd like to find a set or just check out the vast array of merchandise, radio-related ephemera and radios that await you down there, it's worth the road trip, folks. Head on out. And it's almost time for us to head on out the door. Here's a little Sinatra.
Before Lord God made the sea or the land, he held all the stars in the palm of his hand. And they ran through his fingers like grains of sand. And one little star fell alone. Then the Lord God hunted through the wide night air for the little dark star in the wind down there. And he stated and promised he'd take special care so it wouldn't get lost no more. Now a man don't mind if the stars get dim and the clouds blow over and darken him. So long as the Lord God's watching over him, keeping track how it all goes on. But I've been walking through the night and the day till my eyes get weary and my head turns gray. And sometime it seems maybe God's gone away, forgetting his promise and the word he'd say. And we're lost out here in the stars, little stars, big stars, blowing through the night. And we're lost out here in the stars, little stars, big stars, blowing through the night. And we're lost out here in the stars.
shoutin' and shoutin' and Mammy's little baby loves shoutin' and bread. Mammy's little baby loves shoutin' and shoutin' and Mammy's little baby loves shoutin' and bread. Put on the skillet, put on the lid. Mammy's gonna make a little shoutin' and bread. That ain't all she's gonna do. Mammy's gonna make a little coffee too. Mammy's little baby loves shouting and shouting and Mammy's little baby loves shouting and bread. Mammy's little baby loves shouting and shouting and Mammy's little baby loves shouting and bread. With the skillet, catched me with the lead, catched me with the gal eating shorten and bread. Got six for the skillet, six more for the lead, and fine for stealing that fine bread. Nelson Ed.